Now back to the City Current Radio Show, hosted by Jeremy Park.
Welcome back to the City Current Radio Show. I'm your host, Jeremy Park. We're honored to be joined by our next guest, who's the Senior Director of Programs for Metro Government's Office of Family Safety, Becky Bullard. How are you doing, Becky?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing, Jeremy?
Doing well. So let's start with some history and context. Give us a little bit of a history lesson, if you will, for the Office of Family Safety.
Sure. Well, we have a little bit of a shorter history than most metro offices. So we were just formed in the last 5 years. So we're one of the newer offices for metro government. Our office was formed in July of 2015. And that means that we're still kind of a startup business in a lot of ways. We're figuring out what we need to do to address our mission, which is to make sure that interpersonal violence victims in the city of Nashville are safe and that offenders are held accountable, and also to ensure that our partnerships are really working well between our government partners and our community partners. So we do that in a lot of different ways. But yeah, we've been around for just the last 5 years, and we've made a lot of great progress towards our goals already.
When you talk about statistics and crime as a whole, domestic violence and family safety, the realm you're in is a very important area, both obviously in terms of safety, but also in terms of crime and what it means to the community. Talk about kind of that landscape so people understand how critically important it is for the family, but also for the community at large.
Certainly. So yeah, domestic violence is something that used to be thought of really as a crime within a home and something that really is only impacting the individuals within that home. But that's really not statistically the case. For one, we see domestic violence affecting many, many people in our communities. So 1 in 4 women will experience domestic violence at some point in their life. And when you look at physical violence and sexual violence, that increases to 1 in 3 women in their lifetime. So it is impacting a woman that you know. It also can impact men. So it's not limited to women, but the majority of individuals impacted by abuse for intimate partners are women. So that impact really trickles down to the rest of our community. It certainly impacts the children in that home. It impacts the family members that are related to those individuals. It impacts their friends, their coworkers, their neighbors, and it impacts our overall public safety. So, for example, with what we see with mass shootings in the United States, the majority of those mass shootings are actually in relation to domestic violence incidents, where the shooter is targeting either a family member or an intimate partner. So it has a huge impact on our society as a whole.
I think it's also important to point out that it crosses all socioeconomic levels, races. I mean, to your point, this is something that's pervasive across the community as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We see, you know, there really aren't any kind of one particular type of person who is experiencing abuse. It certainly crosses all divides and impacts so many people that, you know, you may not be aware that it's impacting in your life. Any socioeconomic divides, racial divides, gender divides, as we mentioned as well, sexual orientation as well. It's not only something that impacts individuals who are, LGBTQ, it's affecting all different types of relationships.
So let's take this in two pieces. We'll talk about holding, you know, on the accountability side, holding people accountable. We'll talk about that in a second, but let's dive into the prevention and kind of the action side. Talk about those sort of programs. I know there's a lot of training that you provide. So dive into the prevention piece.
Sure. So we have a lot of programs here at the Office of Family Safety. We work with several of our community partners as well to provide education for the community and also to provide education for all of our metro partners. So as I mentioned before, we have a lot of different focuses for our office in just the short time that we've been around. And one of the big focuses is that prevention component, to make sure that we're teaching our community about violence. We're teaching our community how it impacts people of all backgrounds. We're teaching people not only about domestic violence, but also about sexual violence, child abuse, elder abuse, and human trafficking, and how all of those abuses are intersecting and related to each other. So we're making sure that we're getting that information out, not only to the community, but also to our metro partners. So we do have a training program specific to every metro employee, and they are required to get training on domestic violence and to understand how to recognize workplace violence as well. So it gives them a little bit more of some action steps that they can take if they feel like a coworker is maybe in an abusive relationship, or if a coworker is even participating in abuse. How can they report that? What can they do? What are some of the action steps that they can take to make sure that their workplace is safe and to make sure that that individual is safe as well?
Give us maybe one or two, when you talk about the tips, give us maybe one or two of just your favorite related to having a safe workplace and ensuring safety.
Yeah, I think it's really important for people to talk to each other. So that's a really basic thing, it sounds like, but it's important for us to kind of know more about each other's lives as much as people are willing to understand, and to recognize when there are times when an individual is feeling like their relationship is maybe strained, there's some control issues that you might be flagging there when someone's not allowing their intimate partner to do things that seem like normal things that anyone should have their own agency to be able to do, like to eat what they want or to wear what they want or to talk with who they want. And so flagging those control and manipulation flags can be really helpful to just kind of give us some insight into what someone's relationships are looking like and if there's some potential power and control issues there. I think that's probably by far one of the biggest ones. It's very difficult for people to share when they're in an abusive relationship because there's a lot of shame associated with staying in that relationship. There is a lot of kind of perceived possible judgment that might come from sharing, you know, what's going on in your personal life. So, and it can be a really hard thing to open up about, but always being there, letting our coworkers know that we're there to support them. And we want to make sure that they're in a good situation and that we're there to help them if they need it. That can be just a great start.
Carry that forward on the collaboration side, because as you mentioned, you have a number of partners. And so collaboration really is key on all fronts. Give us an idea of what that looks like in terms of the number of different organizations and that sort of collaborative nature of what you're doing.
Absolutely. So in the victim services field, it's impossible to do good work for a client without working with other agencies. And that's because not one agency can do everything for someone who's in need. And so one of the reasons that our office exists is because we have two family justice centers in Nashville, which is really unique. And we should be really proud of that as a city, that we've invested in having these two centers. Our first center was actually opened before our office was created, and that is the Jean Crow Advocacy Center, which opened in September of 2014. The Jean Crow Advocacy Center is based in the courthouse. And that came from really an assessment that we did on what our response looked like for victims of domestic violence. We found a huge need to increase that collaboration that you mentioned in the courthouse and to increase safe spaces in the courthouse for victims who are going to testify against their abuser and were waiting in the courtroom right next to their abuser or maybe their abuser's family. So that was our first kind of initiative with our office, with our partners, to come together in the courthouse and create a safe space there. And in that center, we're able to work with clients, our advocates work with clients. We also have the district attorney's office that's able to speak with clients who would like to speak with their district attorney. They also are able to access other legal services and get support, for example, with counseling and therapy as well. So lots of great services in a small space in the criminal justice system there in the courthouse. And then we have our nice, big, new Family Justice Center on Murfreesboro Pike, and that has been open for just a little over a year. And that is really the pinnacle of our collaboration in Nashville. It is a place that we have dreamed of for several decades. And a Family Justice Center is just this amazing place where we can come together all under one roof. We can be in the same space to be able to offer comprehensive services to that person who walks through our door and doesn't have just one need. They have many needs. So they come in, they need a food bag. They need a safe shelter. They need to get an order of protection to make sure that they're safe from the person who's harming them. They also need some assistance with childcare. And maybe they'd like to speak with a detective about filing charges on their case. And those are things that we can offer when we're all together in one space. So that's one of our biggest points of collaboration, is really being in the same building and having such strong working relationships with our referrals and the way that we're able to support our clients, knowing that they can get lots of different things, or they can just get one thing. It's really up to them.
But having it in one place is a huge advantage, so that they're not having to go all these different areas that can take valuable time, but also to retell that story over and over and over again. So minimizing the trauma even of going through and then being able to quickly act on it. And so timing is everything, obviously, but so is them not putting themselves in that trauma situation over and over and over again. Talk about then flipping over on the other side of accountability and taking those steps to make sure that justice is served.
Sure. I just want to mention, you bring up such a great point of minimizing trauma. And that's a huge impact of family justice centers, because we do see, you know, imagine your worst story, something so personal that would be so hard to talk to anyone that's a stranger about. And then imagine having to tell that over and over and over again. That's the experience of someone who has experienced abuse. They're talking about something really intimate, really personal with a stranger. And so if we can minimize the impact of retelling their story, understand how traumatic it is, and understand what trauma looks like, and educate all of our partners on that, we really can create safe spaces. To your accountability question, we do that in a number of ways with our partnerships. So we have several multidisciplinary teams where we work with partners from our community-based agencies, our nonprofit partners, like our shelters, our counselors and therapists, different medical providers. And then we also have on those teams our criminal justice partners. And those are individuals from the DA's office, from various law enforcement divisions within the police department. And we're all looking at those two things, those two components of victim safety and offender accountability. So when we look at offender accountability, we look at how can we make sure that that person is getting the counseling and therapy that they need to understand that controlling and manipulative behavior is not okay. And that in fact, that abuse can be against the law, depending on how they act out that power and control. And again, to go back to that larger public safety, to make sure that we're flagging those really high risk individuals who could be not only a risk to their intimate partner, but also to their children, to their extended family, and even to our larger community. So we do that with those multidisciplinary teams where we're looking through those high-risk cases, we're flagging those high-risk behaviors, we're connecting with our criminal justice system partners to say, look, this person is really engaging in a lot of risky, abusive behaviors, and we want to make sure that they're flagged for the criminal justice system so that they're held accountable.
How can we as the public help?
Yeah, I think it's important to spread the word. So we've only had the Family Justice Center on Murfreesboro Pike open for the last year. And there's still a lot of people that I talk to in Nashville that don't know about the center and don't know that we have one of the largest family justice centers in the country. And there are hundreds of family justice centers throughout the country. So that's an amazing thing for us to be proud of. And just making sure that we're spreading the information about where people can go to get those resources all under one roof is incredibly helpful. Also really helpful to educate yourself on the issues, to understand what interpersonal violence looks like, to understand how it intersects with so many types of crimes, and to understand some of those signs of power and control, those signs of abusive relationships.
So that leads us to the last question, which is, where do we go? Website, social media, phone number, email, where would you direct people to?
Sure. So our website is ofs.nashville.gov. And when you go to our website, you can see a lot of different resources. So you'll see information about who we are, what we do, information about our two centers. So where we're located, we're at 610 Murfreesboro Pike is our large community-based center. And then the Jim Crow Advocacy Center is in the Birch Building of the courthouse, actually in the Ben West side of the Birch Building. So those are, you know, our centers are there. You can see where to go. You can see pictures of the center, which is really helpful for people to kind of understand what they're walking into. And you can also get a lot of resources there. So if you know someone who's in an abusive relationship, there's a whole page on our website that's dedicated to how you talk to that person and how you refer them to services and how you can be a support to them. So I'd start with our website. It's a great place to get a lot of resources and information if you want to learn more. And then our phone number is 615-880-1100. And you can call that anytime between 8:30 and 5:30, and we'll answer the phone, we'll direct you to referral sources. And then after hours, our phone rolls over to a 24-hour hotline as well.
Well, Becky, greatly appreciate all you and your team do. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it.